Artificer Creation.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Let's Talk Photography podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for August 2025. It's been a while, but this is not a solo show. This is, in fact, an interview show. Long-time friend of the show and my partner in crime for a lot of other podcasting things is Alison Sheridan from the NoSillaCast podcast over at podfy.com. Alison sent me an email with a really good topic suggestion. And one of the tricks Alison taught me was when listeners send in suggestions, you should try to get them to do most of the work. And I decided to try use Alison's advice against her. And she was absolutely game to have a conversation about this. So, without much further ado, I am going to play you our conversation about photographing in an urban environment. Alison, it is fantastic to talk to you again. I know my listeners have forgotten that I sometimes do conversation shows because it's been just me for ages.
But it's been lovely.
Oh, thank you. But I'm actually really happy to have someone to talk to, and I'm twice as happy because you saved me figuring out a topic. You sent me a fantastic email, and I could have used it to build my own show, but it was like, no, it's actually, this is good, and I want to talk to Alison. So hello.
Hello in the what might be the first crossover episode of my shows and your shows, so this is going to be fun. What I was thinking about was I had the very rare opportunity to visit Bart in his homeland many years ago. And he lives in the most beautiful place. I mean, you've got, you know, just gorgeous surroundings, the Carlton House, you've got water, you've got hills, you've got flowers. It's just such a beautiful place. I live deep in Los Angeles, and so I'm very much in an urban environment. And I started thinking about how a lot of what you teach applies, but there's also big swaths that I just can't do. You know, the things just don't exist in the same way to find it. And I remember one time we were chatting and you said, well, Alison, just look for some big puffy clouds to do it with. And I said, it turns out in Los Angeles, we have two things. We have cloud or no cloud. It's either entirely socked in from above or there's nothing. I mean, when we get clouds, it's like everybody runs outside to go look at them because it's like, wow, look, you can see separate ones.
Oh, so when it's overcast, it's just gray and no detail or blue.
Right.
And no detail.
Right. Yeah. Every once in a while, I'll post a photo of like one single little puff of cotton, and I'll post it with Stormwatch 2025. I mean, yeah. It literally hasn't rained since January. So we're just in a completely different world here.
Yes.
So, but what it got me thinking about was that I still take a lot of photos, and I still take a lot of what I consider beautiful photos or compelling photos, but it's because of how I look at the world, I think. I've had a lot of times where I take a photo of like a gorgeous sunset. I'm like, oh man, that's spectacular. And I get back home and I go, okay, there's power lines all through this. We have overhead power lines, which are just ugly. You know, they're not as bad as the ones we saw in India, but they're pretty ugly. And so what I've learned to do is to find ways to either embrace that as part of the imagery or to just get the photo taken in a way that disappears. And one of the photos I sent you was Steve and I were staying at this kind of ratty little hotel, and it was next to this just weird little pond that was surrounded by chain link fence. It was a square. It was dirt all around the outside because it was up in Fresno where it's, you know, 180 degrees outside. There was industrial complexes all around it. But when I looked at it, I saw this beautiful reflection of these trees. Mm-hmm. And so I just zoomed in until I saw the beautiful reflection of the trees. You can see a little bit of fence, but, you know, you can tell there's a couple little duckies and stuff. And it's kind of a nice little photo. And so I was thinking about how I look at things to try to, like, I see the beauty first, but then I got to compose it so that you can see the beauty that I saw. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
And that's one of the things someone a long time ago said to me that made a little thing go ping in my brain. A painter starts with nothing and gets to just make a pretty thing. A photographer starts with the universe, with everything in it, and has to pick just the piece they want to share. And then,
right,
you know, make that compelling. And you have more work because you have to find a very carefully chosen subset. I'm going to guess you do a lot of a few inches to the left, a few inches to the right, duck down a bit, stand up, a bit, up. Zoom in a bit, walk back a bit, four steps to the right. How does that work? Oh, yay.
And a whole lot of burning of my photos. Your audience certainly knows that you're a big proponent of, you know, you take 200 pictures, you post one or two. And in our community, we call that barting of our photos. And it's just delightful to me whenever I'm with my daughter, Lindsay, and she goes, oh, yeah, I got to bart my photos before I send them to you.
Oh,
yeah, a constant thought of it. Another thing I've done is embracing the I use a hashtag I call urban beauty. So yeah. I've seen like a beautiful little fall leaf sitting on the sidewalk, and I take a picture of it from straight down, and well, that looks stupid, you know. And then I get down on my hands and knees, and I get kind of an angular photo. I mess around with getting how close to it and far away, and how much I want it in focus. And sometimes what I've done is I'll realize, wait a minute, if I angle this just right, I can get that ugly old truck in the background, and I'll put it in the photo because it's like I saw this beauty, but this is where I am.
That's contrast, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it definitely is.
One of the iPhone's superpowers is that if you turn it upside down, it just reorients itself. So you don't have to bend all the way down, because if you hold the camera upside down and shoot with the volume button, you can have that camera, the lens could be literally an eighth of an inch off the ground, and you're not on your face. You might be hunkered down, but you know, you're just hunkered down and holding your phone down between your legs or whatever. You can get really cool shots.
I was actually on my walk when I sent you these photos, and I had just flipped my camera upside down when I heard you say that on the podcast, because I was listening to Let's Talk Photography. But I forget, so it's good to remember that that's it, because a lot of times I'm like, oh, I can't get down low enough. Oh, this goes the other way too.
Yeah, because some of my favorite things are like, a leaf can be very difficult because they can be very, very flat unless they're a little bit curved, and then they stick up enough that you can get away with it. But a pine cone looks massive when you have your phone right up next to it, right down on the ground, and you have 360 degrees. Mm-hmm. There's got to be something. You know, something. If you go all the way around, there's got to be something.
Right, right. Another thing I like to capture in this kind of an environment is pictures I always tag with life finds a way, because there will be, you know, this little a flower trying to get out of a fence. You can see there's all these beautiful flowers on one side of a picket fence, but one of them has come out to say hi, you know, look out from the side, or come up from between cracks in a sidewalk. I think those are really fun shots.
Yeah, I imagine cracks in a sidewalk are something you get a lot. What we get probably more than you, because we have old stone walls, and they have obviously lots of stones joined together with some sort of mortar or cement, and that degrades over time, and I guess dust builds up or something, but plants grow in walls. Mm-hmm. Like, and they're often not very big. It could be like a tiny little fern that's 2 inches tall, but it's a little fern. And with the iPhone's amazing ability to shoot up close, get up close, you know?
So one thing I was going to ask you about, and this is a technique thing, so I think it fits into the art and craft, not the actual device, but I tend not to use the 5X zoom and I also don't use the macro lens most of the time. What I do is the 3X. So I've got the iPhone 16 Pro, so it's got 1.3 right. Or what is it? 1.3 and 5. Well, 0.5, yes. 1.3 and 5. So I'll use the
0.5, 2.
Jeez, just look at my phone.
It's 2.
1, yeah, 0.5, 1, 2, and 5. You're right. Yeah. So I'll use the 2X. I find that the 5X just gets kind of a gritty look to it. I don't know. The optics don't seem as good. And I'm not always happy with how
light. The 5X needs, like, give me ideal conditions and don't ask me to work very hard and I'll give you an okay photograph.
Okay. But the 2X of moving your hand closer, you can do a lot better.
Yeah, I do. I've started to do most of my macros with the 1X real close.
Oh, okay. Okay. But I don't use the mode where it puts the little flower out there that it forces it into macro. I use the 2X to get the shallow depth of field. I find that to be more pleasing to me.
It depends. Well, I do both. I will try both. Because sometimes I find that when the light isn't great, the 1X gives me a sharper shot. And you won't notice it on the screen until you pinch and zoom and you pixel peep. And maybe I shouldn't pixel peep. Maybe that's my problem. But when I do pixel peep, I sometimes find the 1X gives just a slightly nicer, tiny little bit more detail. But sometimes it gives too much background. And so if the background is distracting, if it's not all the one color or there's too much going on, step back 2X, the background goes disappears,
right?
And right, you're right. In business. But the 5X rarely does me justice on a macro. It's useful for something actually far away.
Right. That is where I use it. You know, I'm going to steal one that from your list because it's something I do as well, is especially in a crowded environment where, you know, I pass a house literally every 50 feet when I'm on my walks, because that's about how wide our wider lots are. Some of them are narrower than that. And the hashtag I use here is just called I love people, because people just do the cutest little things in their yards. Yeah, you know, they'll have a little pot that they've painted with some squirrely face on it, or you know, have some ridiculous garden gnome that just made them laugh one day, or sometimes it would be like a collection of them, and it's just so fun to know that somebody did that just for the enjoyment of somebody walking by.
Yeah, this picks up around here in the autumn when people start to put out Halloween decorations of various sorts, which can sometimes just be whole vegetables just arranged in a nice little group and a little wreath of autumn leaves. They've started to do that, actually, where I'm used to having a wreath at Christmas with like wintry stuff, but they now have like autumn wreaths where it's all these amazing red leaves and stuff just hung on the door. And then, like, you know, a cute selection of different colors and shapes of squashes or something down below. Not even carved. Like, just, it's autumn. Hey, I could be great fun.
It's called my mother used to put that out, and she called it a cornucopia. She'd have it's sort of like a funnel that you stuff a bunch of squash. So horn of plenty, cornucopia, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah, I didn't used to see it until recently, and now I just notice them and say, oh, that's fun. And then at Christmas, I'm not generally a fan of gaudy things, but Christmas is Christmas, right? That's just different.
Well, plus when you go too far, that's when it gets good again, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There's like tasteful and pretty, and I will definitely take a picture and enjoy it. And then there's like, yeah, a bit cheesy. And then there's like, oh, yeah, that's like proper cheesy.
Your electric bill is $2,000 a month. I'll give you a head nod for this one, right?
Yeah. Well, I think the one I saw this year for the first time was you hang it out of your upstairs window and it's a rope ladder with a Santa Claus halfway up.
Oh, nice.
So it's hanging out of kids' bedroom windows, little Santa Claus scurrying up the house. And the rope ladder is a bead of LED lights that run up and down sometimes.
Oh, neat. So it's animated. I like it. In my son's neighborhood, there's a house that decorates with skeletons at Halloween, not Christmas.
Yeah.
And they've got like 40 of them basically crawling all over the front of the house. They're breaking into windows. They're hanging from the chimneys. They're all over it. And apparently they put it up over a period of time. So every day when you go by the house, you see more skeletons. Oh, and that's a lot of fun.
Oh, that's amazing. That'd be a fun little sort of a series, right? First day, a week later. No, my favorite actually Halloween, someone spent a lot of time making this and they put it out every year. They have a horrible, ugly telegraph pole right in front of their driveway. And I'm sure they hate it 99% of the time. But at Halloween, mm-hmm. they stick a full-size figure of a witch splatted on it with half a broom out the back.
The classic, the classic. Another thing I like to take pictures of, we don't have a lot of annoying bugs in Southern California. Really is a miracle place. We don't have mosquitoes or, you know, we have some bees, but that's about it. A lot of butterflies, but we will have little bugs, like little tiny pill bugs. You know, the little bugs that you, the roly polies. Have you seen those?
I don't think we have exactly the same, but I have a fairly good idea what you mean. Yeah.
So it's a bug that rolls up into a sphere and then you can roll it around. But I like or snails on the rare occasions that it rains, the snails come out. And I love to get down really, really close and tight on one of those and get a picture of the little antennae going around and get a tight shot of that. And again, it can be with that urban beauty thing with the garbagey looking background to bring out the contrast. But to just focus in on something really small is fun. So I can't get those big, expansive, beautiful photos that you have unless I go down to the ocean. I can, but you know, in my normal urban environment, it's a more of a challenge. So I go small when I in the other direction.
Well, the universe exists at multiple scales, and I think we tend to think what it looks like at 1x zoom at about human eye height, and we forget mm-hmm. how different it looks when you get close or higher up or lower down. And we shouldn't.
Right, right. Makes it a lot more fun. I've tried doing stuff. I did a series when I was a little kid. I think I called it Up a Tree or something like that, where I just took pictures looking straight up something, straight up a tree, up a cliff, whatever I could get. I never got anything terribly compelling, but they entertained me trying to succeed at that.
Well, that's interesting because I've seen some very interesting, like Manhattan, where you lean into the fact that it's a very, very tall place. And in Manhattan, a lot of the pretty is way up there. So if you're just looking at eye levels, you're not seeing anything, but no, it's up that way. And it's like people putting their phone vertical on the ground and shooting up inside like Times Square or something with the wide angle lens, or up that avenue that the sun sometimes shines down. Can't remember which one that's called. And, you know, just these kind of places. Yeah. And then you have the perspective effect as your friend and this amazing thing sort of like a forest. I think people did in the bamboo forests in Japan as well, only with trees.
Yeah.
Those are not trees, they're grass. Jesus.
Those are really, really hard to capture. We went through some of the bamboo forest when we were in Japan just a few months ago. And the only way we could get a photo was by pointing the camera up because there were 11 million people in that bamboo forest with us. I took a video of like looking up and then I just rotated it down and you go from this beautiful, crazy giant grasses and then just this wall of humanity walking towards me. So that was a little challenging to get the up, but you're right. Looking up was the only way to get it.
I wonder if there isn't another photo there of everyone else taking photos. This is adjacent, and it's not in my notes, right? But I'm reminded of something. So maybe touristy places, there's a hidden opportunity. So people go to photograph steam trains, and they bring step ladders and all sorts of stuff so that they're higher up and they can get an unobscured view of the steam train. And there's one guy I follow on Flickr, and he walks back 50 feet, and he takes a picture of the circus, like the circus of people, and he still gets the train. I love his photographs because it's about the event. It's like, yeah, it's a pretty steam train in a beautiful place. And look at these lunatics.
I don't know if you know. Do you know Wally Trewinski?
Yes, I interviewed him here on this show at your suggestion.
That's right. That's right. He taught me to do exactly that. He said one of the examples he gave was when everybody's looking at the sunset. If you get a picture of everybody taking a picture of the sunset, what you get is this beautiful warm glow across the audience. And so you get a very different perspective that way. Or if you've got a nice background, sometimes that's the prettier picture than staring into the sun with your camera. But I remember I got a picture. God, where were we? I think we were in India with him, and we were on some riverboat, and everybody had rushed to the side to take a picture of something that was off in the background. And I backed up to the opposite side and got a picture of everybody taking their pictures of it. And that was a much more interesting photo to me too.
Yeah. And I imagine at like a solar eclipse or something, it's got to be very tempting to focus only on the sun, but maybe in your second or third eclipse to focus on the people focusing on the sun.
Yeah, every one of those is precious, and you've only got, two or three minutes. So it's everyone I've seen, I wouldn't spend too much time photographing at all. The first one I saw, I spent all of my time trying to get a picture, and I did not at all appreciate the majesty of what I was seeing. And so I swore to myself the next time I was going to take any photos. Right before the one we saw in Chile, this guy showed me this little chart that said, okay, if your f-stop is this and you're, he just gave all the settings and said, dial that in. And I went, okay, I'll take one photo. And I dialed it in and I got the most spectacular photo I've ever taken of that eclipse. And then I stopped. I saw it.
You've done that.
Got it. And I'm just going to enjoy the rest of it. So if you ever do get to see an eclipse, I don't try to photograph it. I mean, if you have to, do it, but spend the absolute minimum amount of time doing that as you can and just sit there and enjoy it.
Like I say, I didn't do it on my first, and so far on my only, but hey, I still have time. but I think the next time, rather than trying to get a picture of the eclipse, I think I want a picture of people's faces watching it with their eclipse glasses on in awe. I think it could be some very fun photographs that way. For the last 30 seconds, enjoy the middle. Yeah, because it's cool. Then the sun does its magic, the little hairy bits come out. Then you have like 20 seconds to take a picture of everyone and then go back to get the diamond ring on the other side.
I'm going to remember astronomer Bart says the little hairy bits come out, the corona. Steve does an interesting thing. He sets up his camcorder with a big zoom to record the progression of the eclipse, but he also sets up a GoPro that watches the audience. Uh-huh. And so he gets the audio of the audience and the video of the group, and he blends those two videos together. And I should give you a link to that for your show notes, because his video I think it's the one in Chile that's the greatest, because you can hear everybody just going bananas. And you also hear it, a progression of audio across this giant field that we were in, so that you can hear, because it's hitting some people much sooner than it's hitting us. Yeah. And you could hear their exclamations. So the audio is a big part of knowing the amazement people are feeling. So that's a really cool way to do it.
That's a better soundtrack than Stravinsky or Mozart or anything could be, just the sheer actual joy.
Yeah. I really, really like his videos of those. Those have been very cool. There's another one coming up in Spain in 2026 that we're going to. So hopefully we'll get to see another one. Remember, if you go to try to see an eclipse, you're buying a chance.
Yes. Now, some countries have better chances than others. Spain, mm-hmm. on average, has more clear days in a year. Mm-hmm. But not 100%.
Right. You never know.
Because I went to France, which is usually pretty good, and I think we got 10 seconds in a gap in the clouds.
Oh, we had one like that in Texas. Texas, for crying out loud. Texas,
there you go. Yeah. QED.
You think you'd be fine, but nope. We got 10 seconds for a 3-day trip. But anyway, what else?
Well, sort of keyed in off your ideas. So I really want to just double down and agree with your nature finds a way. Like, if you're walking along and you notice like this one pink flower has managed to poke out between something, that is a photograph that I can never pass it by. Something like that. I just can't. No, doesn't matter what I'm doing. Stop. Take out the camera. Take a picture. Let me see.
Well, I've got one to talk about. Maybe I've talked about it to you about it before. I know you've heard me talking about it. One of my goals in life is to get a spectacular photo of a bird of paradise. So for the audience, if you haven't seen one of these, yes, it's a flower, and it looks like a bird, and it's pretty two-dimensional. And it's got all different kinds of colors. It's got kind of a purple tongue, and it's got bright orange, and it's got kind of some hairy things that hang down. They're interesting as they get older. They look like, withered, older people. but they're somehow almost impossible to take photos of. I've tried taking them edge on, you know, looking down the nose of it. I've tried doing, macro shots just of that little purple tongue. I've tried it with the sun behind it. If you try to get more than one in the picture, it's a disaster because they're like the birds in Finding Nemo. You remember where the seagulls are going, mine, 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 mine. And they're all just, that's what they look like. They all look all different directions. They're completely confused. Nobody's paying attention to the same thing. They're all going to. So I've tried to like embrace that, you know, by getting one really beautiful one in the front and show the ridiculousness chaos of the rest behind of them in the background. I have gotten a few good photos. I have yet to get a photo that I went, that's the one. That's what I've been trying to get. And they're gorgeous and they're everywhere. And I've taken hundreds and hundreds of photos, but I have not yet figured out how to get a great photo of them.
And one day you'll accidentally get there at a different time of the day and the light will be at a different angle that you've never had it before and you'll get it.
I hope so. But it's the focus is hard. Because even they're almost two dimensional, flat on, and trying to get the room to look into that you've talked about before. Because you crop it off, it looks just throw that picture away. You cut the nose off, you've lost the game for sure. But I want to get close enough to get that good bokeh in the background. You know, I can't get it yet. I've gotten a few I'm happy with, but never yet. That's the one.
Yeah. Now, you're a lot more at home in the urban environment than I am because you live in it. And I grew up in the country. I like where I live in Maynooth because it's at the edge of the country. And I usually go out of that edge and into the countryside rather than into the urban city. But I've been practicing at getting more urban style photographs and stuff, which is interesting because it's really not my comfort zone. And one of the things I kind of like to keep an eye out for is that most places exist at multiple scales. So if you have like a beautiful park, you'll stand in it as a human and you'll go, oh, wow, this is beautiful. And you'll take a picture and it'll be flat. It'll be rather uninteresting. Mm-hmm. And I sort of figured you have to show it at more than one scale at once by going wide and then close to anything interesting, a sundial, a nice little pot with flowers hanging out of it, something, say, tucked into the bottom left corner or just something. And then the person looking at your photograph gets a sense of the depth. It's like, oh, look, this is a place with little pretty things and it goes on. And maybe it has like paths with a particular shape. And so you can sort of see that vanishing off into the distance. But the flower on its own, yeah, okay. The park on its own, yeah, okay. But if you can get them together, if you can get two scales in the one photograph, it gives a sense of reality to the image.
So you're saying close up to something and then being able to see the rest fuzzy or clear, crisp in the background?
Both can work, but a lot of time you're going to use the wide angle lens because it has a deep depth of field. And so you really do still get a sense of, I'm in a park, it's got these cool parallel paths or whatever, and I can see that those flower beds have this beautiful, whatever it is, petunia or something, or that there's this lovely sundial at the junction of two paths coming to meet each other, or three or whatever, or it's a beautiful square with these lovely buildings behind, or, you know, there's something. It exists at multiple scales, which in reality these things do.
I still don't find that I get pictures that are compelling to me when I go wide. I've played around with it when I'll be, a lot of times I'm listening to you when I'm walking and I'll experiment with things. And I don't know.
It needs a big place.
I haven't gotten anything I really like.
But it doesn't work everywhere, because if the place isn't interesting at a big scale, then going wide doesn't have anything of interest. And when I say you have to get close, it's this, like the distortions are having the opposite effect of compression. So you have to get unimaginably close. Your brain is going, that can't be right. But it's the opposite of the compression effect from a zoom lens, because you're negative zooming. And so you, to get the effect, you actually need to find something at a not too low to the ground, or things will be all distorted, and get way closer than looks normal. And the people around you are like, why are you hugging the sundial? Like, why are you 3-4 inches from this sundial? How can that possibly work? But with the wide angle lens, that's perfect.
Interesting. I remember the last time I tried to do it, there were some really cool flowers along the right-hand side of the sidewalk, between the sidewalk and the street. And then there were some pretty flowers on the left-hand side of on somebody's front yard. And so I got low and I went super wide angle, and it just looked like horse poop. It basically looked like a sidewalk when I was done, because it was separated. You know, I didn't have the thing in the center, and that didn't work. So I tried it from one side looking across into the street, and that looked like garbage too. I didn't get anywhere.
The next time you're in a big place, like a big public park, which has like, you know, a lot of parks will have very carefully laid out.
My parks are like 50 by 100 feet in my neighborhood. Yeah.
So it may be the next time you're visiting, you travel a lot, right? You end up in places with bigger parks.
Right. But I'm trying to do the urban environment theme. I got to think of what
I
could.
That's urban too, just not your urban.
Yeah, I mean city, you know.
Yeah, but it may not be appropriate to the technique just may not work for you. You just mightn't have the right scale, because it is for things that exist at a big scale, and a street.
The beach works.
Oh, the beach could have a lot of fun.
The ocean is big. Yeah,
yeah.
My desktop is a picture I took wide angle down at the beach. Sorry, let me just look at my desktop real quick. I'm not all the way down on the ground. I did try it from the ground and didn't get anything I liked, but it's definitely a big wide angle picture of the sunset and the beach. So can work there.
In the abstract, I'm sort of mentally thinking something like, if you can get close enough to a seagull without getting your camera pecked, like a seagull fairly big in the foreground and the Santa Monica Pier behind or something, there could be something there. Or maybe a shell, maybe that won't do as much damage as a cranky
seagull.
How about a
glob of ugly seaweed? That's the closest I can get. You can't get close to seagulls. Definitely not that, unless you have food, and then you're a dead person.
Yeah, that might be too brave. Yeah, okay.
I did find one day I just drove down to the beach and just walked around for no reason. I rarely just spend time relaxing doing that kind of thing. I walk with purpose normally, but I went down to the ocean and I found a child's sand bucket and a little rake. And I put that super close up and did some interesting stuff. I was kind of pleased with that.
Yeah,
I don't know that I went wide, though. Yeah. And I had the sun coming through the plastic.
Oh, no, that sounds very cool. The other thing that strikes me completely not in my notes or anything, but I'm just thinking, you can go wide and up. And you folks have some very tall palm trees.
Yeah. And I've tried to photograph those, too. And I haven't succeeded at that. There's a series of 5 or 6 of them along a street. And there are maybe one per lot or two per lot. So maybe, 300 feet, you get 6 of them, something like that. And I can't get a good picture of them either. And then there's a cluster of 4 that I walk by that are very close together. And I've tried to get cool. I think I got one cool shot. I stood in the center of that cluster and took the photo straight up. And was able to get the palmed leaves all above, straight above me with the blue, dark blue sky. And that worked out pretty well. But I wouldn't think to use, would you use a wide angle to do that?
Yeah. This is very counterintuitive, but it can be very effective because it's not a perspective people are used to seeing. Portrait oriented wide angle. But you need something stupidly tall. And those palm trees might count.
Yeah. Those are very tall.
The other thing is, you'd have to experiment, Alison, because I will often have my camera in my hand and be walking for a good 50 yards until I find where in the heck on this 50-yard stretch is actually the right place.
Okay. So you're actually looking through the camera lens
It vaguely, just enough to get an idea. Am I close enough for this to be interesting? Or is this still, are the trees too big? Are the trees too small? Try it at 1x, try it at 0.5x. Because sometimes back at 2x might actually be nicer for the palm trees, but sometimes really close at 0.5x is surprisingly effective.
That I have never tried. I'll go on a walk this afternoon after we're done recording, and for my evening walk, and I go past those five palm trees in the cluster right around the corner and see what I can do with those. One of the things I've tried to photograph, and this maybe doesn't fit the urban requirement, but it's actually urban for me, is the people that built the house where I am before my house was built. The guy brought an American elm tree from the Midwest out here, and they don't grow here. That's not a native plant by any means. It's the only one of its kind in the neighborhood, and it's actually the largest tree in our city. And the city luckily owns it, so they have to pay to trim this thing. It completely dwarfs my house. I have a two-story house that's almost 3,000 square feet, and I've got photos of it where you can't even see my house because this thing is just so massive. But getting a picture that captures the grandeur of this tree. I mean, it is a spectacular tree. Has been really difficult. I did get in the spring, the leaves are this brilliant, bright, bright green. Then they basically turn to dirt colored in the fall. They don't turn that beautiful autumn colors. They just turn to dirt and fall off.
Most of our trees do that. They go green, brown, gone.
Yeah, they're just awful. I'm jealous of everybody who has the beautiful fall colors. But anyway, in the spring when they first come in, what I did was I laid down on my lawn and just I zoomed in on it to get where all you could see was the green. And those were pretty good. But I want to capture the bigness of the tree. And I can take snapshots of it, but I don't have an image that I'm proud of.
Definitely try a vertical wide angle. And there wouldn't like conveniently be someone with a nice mailbox or something of interest close by to give like a sense of scale, and then the giant big tree. I don't know. I'd go
taking pictures with Steve next to it, but we did it to try to estimate how tall the tree was, because I know how tall Steve is. So we put Steve for scale in the photo. We think it's 70 feet tall.
Wow.
And it's, our lot is 100 feet wide, and it is much wider than our yard. It's maybe 1.5 times the width of our yard. This thing is just massive.
Yeah, because if that was a pine, it would be impressive, but it wouldn't be nearly as wide. It'd be big and pointy. Whereas to have it be that tall and be a giant big wide tree, is like, that's extra special.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody loves it except my neighbor that has a pool.
Ooh, yeah, not
their friend.
Sucks
to be
her
in the fall. But yeah. Oh well. But yeah. It does shade the neighborhood.
Well, there you go. I will use this as an opportunity to throw in another tip I have found very helpful in urban settings. Wide angle, all lenses distort a little bit. They'll give you perspective effects. Like if you take anything that has parallel sides, and unless you are facing it exactly face on with the camera exactly level, and I do mean face on in both axes, so you have to be square to it in all three axes, then it will be parallel in your photograph. If you are off in any axis, it will keystone, either top to bottom, side to side. And sometimes that's okay. With a tree, you could measure it and say, well, I know that pine tree actually slopes at 14 degrees and this one is sloping at 13, therefore it's distorted. But your human brain is perfectly happy to have a tree be slightly at an angle because tree bark isn't parallel anyway. But buildings are. We don't build buildings at a lean. We don't build buildings that are not parallel with each other. And so if you're shooting in the urban, minimize the effect by shooting as face onto the street as you can. And there are sliders in all photo editing apps to fix this. Spend a few minutes and get it. You don't have to be perfect, but get it where it's not distracting. So it's one of those things where there's like a place you don't want to be. The uncanny valley of, you just didn't. It's wrong and you didn't mean it. So if it's close enough, it's close enough. And if it's completely way off, you're having fun and it's cool and artistic. And in between, it's distracting.
Interesting. I haven't spent much time trying to get rid of it, but I should.
I have to do it a lot because of my fondness for the 0.5 lens. That really amplifies the effect. Good at it. Yeah. Like if you're looking at a big tree or something and you're angled back, well, it'll be a cool photo, but you do want to unkeystone it a bit. And then it will really come into its own. And you need to leave a little bit of room when shooting so that when you keystone it, you still have enough left.
I'm trying to picture back to taking the picture of the palm tree. So portrait mode, wide angle, but I've got to tilt it up, right?
Which means you'll need to leave room to unkeystone it a bit. Or
if it's in the center, though,
the distortion.
If it's in the center, though, wouldn't it have no?
Are you leaning up? If you're leaning back, then you're getting distortion from the leaning back. You have to be face on in all three axes to get no keystoning.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So, the keystoning I would get would be that the tree itself would get narrower.
Too short at the top. If you lean back, the tree will bend in. So imagine you're in front of a skyscraper.
Well, bend in, though. It's essentially two parallel lines. Let's assume the pine tree, because a palm tree is a cylinder.
Pretty darn, yeah.
So when it goes away, it'll be narrower at the top.
Yes.
So you're saying that keystone.
Pinch in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And if somehow you were a giant and you were able to lean down, then you'd have the opposite effect.
Right. And like you say, play with it if it's fun.
Yeah. And sometimes you want the effect, but there's an uncanny valley where it just looks accidental and distracting. Just don't be in the uncanny valley. Just go into the sliders and tweak it.
Go one way or the other, right?
Yeah. And cathedrals and pretty old buildings, they look okay and snapshotty before you unkeystone them. And after you unkeystone them, they look like photographs, like you see on a postcard, because someone has spent the time to fix the correction on the postcard or the book cover or the nice photograph in the encyclopedia. It took me a long time to realize that was the difference. Like, oh, if I just correct the distortions. And like, if you have a window near the edge of your frame, either crop in far enough that you can't see that the window edge isn't straight, or fix it so that the window edge is next to your crop and parallel with your crop, but don't have it like close to the edge of your frame and not square, because that will just look careless and wrong.
Okay. I see what you're saying. I haven't spent enough time with the wide angle lens to get good at that, but I have taught a class on how to use the unkeystoning feature in Apple Photos.
Well, even the 1X lens in an urban setting where you're looking at skyscrapers or even just any sort of a building, it will feel slightly off if the edges aren't parallel. And it's worth, even if it's a 2-3 degree nudge in any direction, you can be surprised at how effective just a little bit of careful tweaking can be. And obviously level the horizons. Unless you're in San Francisco where the street is at like a stupendous angle and that's part of the fun. But then include a person or something standing so that you can see that, oh yeah, wow, that pavement is, that famous street is at such a gigantic angle.
And the other tip, post pictures with the horizon crooked. I'm just like, it's the ocean. It's
okay, really water doesn't
easy to
do
make
that.
That with straight. It's a great shot. No.
Yeah, water doesn't sit at an angle. That's the one thing it doesn't do. That's why we use it in spirit levels. I was like, oh, I wonder will we have half an hour's worth of content? Yes, we do. But one thing I definitely want to throw in, now this may be more of an issue in different urban environments to yours, where the color palette is rather muted, tends to aim towards the brown and stuff. With some pretty flowers, and actually your flowers tend to not do subtle. It's very interesting that your grass is very subtle if it's alive at all, and your trees are not that shouty in their colours, but your flowers, whoa, bright purples and all sorts.
every once in a while, I step back and say, wow, this place really is beautiful. You know, in spite of the fact that I've got these ugly power lines, sometimes there are things that, like, they look like a flower that you'd find on a Klingon planet or something. You know, they're just, where did that thing come from? These things are crazy cool. So.
So my other tip for it, it's a lot more in busier cities. Sometimes there can be actually very cool things, like really interesting shapes or whatever. But because the color is so incongruous and shouty, it distracts your eye from the fun shapes and other interesting things. And I think that's why a lot of street photography is monochrome, because the color isn't helping tell the story. It's pulling you away from the story the photographer is trying to tell. And it can be useful to remember it's okay to throw the color away. That's a perfectly valid photographic choice. Yeah. You know, just go monochrome. And the other thing we've mentioned adjacently a few times, but I just want to underline it, is contrasts of any kind tend to make good photographs. So something big and something small, or clashing colors that just like a luminous purple and a harmonious green or something, you know, just anything that sort of contrasts, or a smooth texture of architecture, you know, like man-made-y things with the very natural roughness of some sort of a plant or something. Like London can be great for this because it has these very rigidly structured streets in which they planted lots and lots of trees, because the specific species they planted is known to absorb air pollution. So they plant lime trees because they filter the air. And they did it from Victorian times because they used to burn coal and they couldn't breathe in the winter. But the lime trees clean the air, like air filters for the city. And so they're everywhere in London.
Plus you can make gin and tonics.
Can you, from lime trees? Oh, lime? No, Lyme is in Lyme disease. Linden is the other name for these trees.
Oh,
I'm afraid they're not the citrus. Yeah, they're not the citrus, I'm afraid. Yes. No, that would be amazing if London was... Although, there are cities in Spain that are full of citrus trees where you can just, like, have a citrus dangling above you. Like, oh, that's an interesting green tree. One of those giant big yellow things. Oh, they're lemons.
I made lemonade from fresh lemons from my yard this weekend.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's just alien to me. We think, you know, hazelnuts, yeah, no problem. Lemons? No, that
one. Ooh, I'd trade you lemons for hazelnuts, though.
Yes, okay, right. Alison, thank you. This is a fascinating topic, and you live in urban, so it's really good to talk to you about finding great photographs here. And if anyone looks at my photographs and they're all like, well, I can't take nice pictures because I don't live in a nice place, you're wrong, and Alison is your evidence, and hopefully we've inspired you to find the beauty that is everywhere.
Perfect. Perfect way to describe it. Well, thanks for getting together with me on this, Bart. This was really fun.
I hope you enjoyed listening to that conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. I have captured show notes over at lessustalk.ie. The show notes have Alison's original letter. We had initially thought we might read it out to start the conversation, but we ended up having a very organic conversation without reading it out, and I didn't really feel like interrupting a really good conversation just because we'd said we might read the letter out loud. So the letter is in the show notes, along with some example photographs to illustrate the points Alison was making. I peppered throughout our very organic conversation some various comments that I had prepared in advance, and you'll find those in the show notes too, but not in the order they randomly appeared in our very organic conversation. Basically, they're in the order of that I wrote them down to make sure I had them. I think I've hit them all in the conversation. Either way, they're all relevant to the broader topic of photographing in the urban environment, so you'll find all that at lessustalk.ie. I want to remind you again that Alison does the amazing NarsillaCast podcast, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias, over at podfeet.com, along with Chit Chat Across the Pond with all sorts of cool guests, a lot of Adam Inks these days, which is great fun. And also myself and Alison together do Programming by Stealth, which is one of those podcasts that shouldn't work. Two people talking about programming on an audio-only podcast, that sounds insane. And yet, somehow it isn't insane. It's actually really good fun, and we get a lot of really positive feedback. That's at pbs.bartificer.net, called Programming by Stealth. Right, with that, I am going to wrap up this month's show. Thank you very much to absolutely everyone who does or ever has supported this show in any way, shape, size, or form, whether that be spreading news of the show to your friends and family, or whether that be making a one-off PayPal contribution or a regular Patreon pledge to help me pay the monthly bills. It is all greatly appreciated. This show, like all of my podcasts, are 100% listener supported. We do not have sponsors. We do not have ads. We just have amazing listeners. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Again, show notes at letsustalk.ie. I've been your host, Bart Bouchard. So you can find me at bartb.ie. And until next time, happy snapping.